Welcome to the Mystery Twins Detective Agency. I am Liam S. Smith, and I'm so alone. Don't have nobody to call my own. Please, turn on your magic beam. Mr. Sandman, bring me a dream.
I'm Regan Lloyd, and there's something in my eye.
Oh.
What is it? It's Oh, my eye's exploded. Don't worry about it.
Dun dun.
How are you this week?
I'm good. How are you? I've finished my thesis, handed it in, gainfully unemployed.
Ah, oh, so happy for you.
Time will tell how depressing this gets.
You're not even working your shitty casual job?
Oh yeah, I've still got that, but it doesn't, count.
No, I feel that. No, I'm good. Just getting ready for my burlesque show next week.
Cool. What's the theme? Is the theme themes?
Well, it's a competition, so the theme is the best you that you can be.
Oh, okay. When are you going to put together one where the theme is mystery?
That's a very good question. There was actually a, like, secret agents show last week that one of my friends did. And I was like, motherfucker.
I think you owe it to our junior detectives out there.
I know. I did do a Netflix-themed routine when we were doing Teeves. So, drawing from the podcast, obviously, one of my specialties.
Yep.
Get right on that.
You do that.
I will.
You're a loose cannon, Lloyd.
You know it. Maybe that can be, like, my thing. My boobs are loose cannon. That sounds...
Sure.
Horribly
sexy,
disrespectful to my own breasts.
So what did we watch today?
We watched the third episode of Sleepy Hollow.
Titled something like...
There Will Be Blood.
Good Men Do Nothing, or For Evil to Triumph, or something like that.
Oh, For the Triumph of Evil.
That's right, yes.
Where did I get There Will Be Blood from? That must have been last week's
That's
Blood
Moon.
That's
a movie
one.
Or something.
Yeah.
I think Paul F. Tompkins is in it.
Well,
briefly.
There you go.
So, this is the third episode of Sleepy Hollow, the show where Ichabod Crane comes into the present from the past to fight the apocalypse, led by the Headless Horseman and a demon named Moloch, along with tough cop Abby Mills. She was going to go to Quantico, but now she isn't because she's fighting the apocalypse.
She is, and also, something they brought up in this episode which I had forgotten about from the pilot, is that they're the two witnesses from the Book of Revelations.
Mm. They have to undergo a 7-year period of tribulation in order to achieve something.
And that's a very optimistic premise to give your show, to be honest.
Yeah, I think I heard that at some point in the second or third season they started reducing Abby's role and or killed her off. So I'd be interested to see how that goes.
Oh, wow.
And as she dies, she like leaps from her car onto another car as she's exploding and she's like, witness me. Like from that movie.
Which movie?
The Lake House.
Oh, the Lake House.
No, Mad Max Fury Road.
What?
Mad Max Fury Road.
Is that the new one?
Mad Max, Fury Road, starring Detective Charlize Theron as Dr. Furiosa.
I see. Yeah, I didn't see it, if that's not.
It's pretty good. Anywho, persons of interest. Tom Milson is Ichabod Crane, the man from the past who is basically Doctor Who.
Well, he's not, because he can't go back and forth.
True. But he's like, you know, he's the British guy who knows everything.
Yeah, that's true.
Tom Milson previously played Mr. Bingley in Lost in Austin.
There you go.
Joining him in the co-starring role as our deuteragonist is Nicole Beharie as Abby Mills. I couldn't find an interesting credit on her IMDb page.
Neither could I.
In a prominent recurring role, we have Orlando Jones as Frank Irving, the captain of the police force.
I did realise while I was watching the opening credits today that I just missed him off Persons of Interest last week because he's boring.
I think we talked about him at length in the Teebs episode on this, though, because he plays Harry in Evolution, the movie where they kill some rapidly evolving aliens with the selenium found in Head & Shoulders anti-dandruff shampoo, and the movie ends in a Head & Shoulders ad.
I do not remember discussing that, but that sounds incredible.
I remember enjoying it when I was a dumb kid.
Was that the movie and it had like a yellow smiley face?
Yes, with three eyes.
I remember seeing it in Civic Video.
There's a bit where Orlando Jones' character Harry wants to put his dick in ice cream because an alien bug crawled up it.
Good to know.
The more you know. Rainbow motion. Lindy Greenwood plays Jenny Mills, Abby's institutionalized sister. She played a character called Sonia in a show called Nikita, which apparently is about a rogue assassin taking down the organization that trained her.
Well, that sounds right up my fucking alley.
Yeah, you should look into that. I'm not going to.
I will.
To. And then rounding out our cast this week, we have Mary Craft as Dr. Vega. Mary voiced a character named Crystal in a cartoon called Squidbillies. We have Pete Burris as Garrett Gillespie. Those of you who have watched Stranger Things might recognise him as the head of security at Hawkins Labs.
Man, I still haven't fucking watched that.
We should find an excuse to watch it for this podcast.
Definitely, yes.
There's a vague mystery bent to that. At least as vague as this show's.
Yeah, this show's kind of letting me down.
This one had a more episodic plot, though, which I could get into more.
It's true.
And finally, rounding out this episode, we have Marty Matulis as the Sandman. He played someone called Piggy Man in American Horror Story and the Surgeon in Teen Wolf. Presumably not the Michael J. Fox 80s movie and the TV series instead.
I see.
You know, Teen Wolf?
Yeah, I know Teen Wolf.
With Michael J.
We're
Fox?
We're friends. Yeah.
That bit where he surfs on the top of the car or something with his wolf claws?
Sure.
Do you think word started getting out that their basketball team had a werewolf on it and they were like, maybe we shouldn't go and play against them?
Surely. Surely that happened.
Well, I hear that modern Teen Wolf has lacrosse instead of basketball, so presumably they have, like, the equivalent of muzzles on in that.
What? You don't wear a muzzle in lacrosse?
But you wear a helmet.
Do you?
With, like, a cage in front of your face, right? Because lacrosse balls are, like, made of stone and you fling them with clubs. You know,
I guess, I've only ever played lacrosse in PE and we were in the country.
Club?
So you just had, like, the little catchy thing and the ball and no
soft
protective
cross,
headwear.
As they call it.
Do they, or are you just being mean to me?
That is a thing, like the soft equivalent of lacrosse. Do you think lacrosse is the douchiest sport?
No, I think polo is the douchiest sport.
Yes, yes, rather. Which is like lacrosse on horses, right?
I'm pretty sure, yeah.
Or possibly croquet on horses, I'm not sure.
It's something fancy, and they made it fancier because you wear horses.
You wear horses? You all...
Oh, God, no, you don't.
One person in the duo puts on the front half of the horse, the other person puts on the back half, and then you try to score some goals.
Yeah, but it's fun because you're hindered by being part of a pantomime horse, so you can't really see very well. And also, you have to, like, get on the back half of the horse's shoulders to be able to catch the ball anyway. It's just a really fun time, great spectator sport.
Yeah, it's really great for people who are into, like, low-key but also higher contact gymnastics and acrobatics. While we're talking about sports, by the way, this is something I was wondering this week. What's the goal in roller derby? Is there, like, a ball? Do you get goals, or is it just about, like, a demolition derby with peeps?
I think you have to get over the line faster. Or have the most people from your team over the line.
Okay, so it's like British Bulldog on rollerblades?
Maybe, yeah. I honestly can't tell you. And I've seen Whip It, so I should know.
Whip It, good. Oh, so you have to go forward, move ahead, and try to detect it before it's too late.
Yeah, I think that's genuinely how it works.
All right, do you want to talk about Sleepy Hollow?
Yeah, I mean, that's why we're here, isn't it?
I guess so. Really, why are we here? We're here because we've been selected to undertake a 7-year tribulation of witnessing mystery TV shows.
Yeah, so, I mean, we can't do anything about it. We just got to keep going until we've finished fulfilling the prophecy.
And somewhere out there is a dark podcast being run by the Headless Horseman. He's not very good at it because he doesn't have a mouth.
No, it's actually a YouTube channel and he just subtitles everything.
Which is very inclusive, really.
Yeah, like, good on him.
Yeah, he's really outdoing us in all the sort of social justice metrics.
One of my friends used to have a YouTube beauty channel, and it was when she still lived in Prague and she couldn't speak English very well, so she just did it all without speaking and then put subtitles on the bottom. And then she sort of became like mildly big as like that deaf YouTuber, and she was like, no, I'm not deaf, I just can't speak English
right
very well. But
the
I could
devil
write it.
Wears Praga.
That's very funny.
No, it isn't.
I liked it, and that's what counts.
So we open with Abby being called in late at night because Crane's interrogating a suspect and there's a forensic psychologist there, which at first made me think that this might have accidentally been the crossover episode with Bones.
Me too!
Even though she's not a forensic psychologist, she's just a forensics person in Bones.
No, I did exactly the same thing.
So they get into that room behind the one-way mirror where they watch the interrogation, and the suspect is Abby. What? But Abby's the one who they just called in. What's going on?
Abby's both watching herself be interrogated and being interrogated.
And then she goes into the room, and then Crane is in the interrogatee spot, and he has ghost eyes, and he says, "Stop lying, the truth will set you free."
And then he turns into a monster.
Yeah, and like the lights flicker and she's like, let me out, let me out. And then there's a creepy ghost man there with sand pouring from his eyes. And then she wakes up because she was having a bad dream. Or was it?
Well, it was, because now she's being actually called in.
Yeah. Dispatcher there, and they're like, yo, this woman, Dr. Mara Vega, is going to commit suicide and only wants to speak to you. Can you, like, come help us out, dude?
But the thing is, Abby doesn't know her, so why does she want to talk to Abby?
Well, she goes up there, and who could it be but the forensic psychologist from her dream, who also psychologized her institutionalized sister Jenny when they were kids, after they saw creepy trees and a demon.
I think psychologized is the scientifically correct term, yes.
Yes, rather.
So that's weird. And then she says to Abby, they're coming for you, and then jumps. All right.
The end. Abby describes her as being like she was looking like she was sleepwalking, and then they are examining her eyes, and they're like, huh, looks like she has massive cataracts. There's no sign of trauma. And then the eye they're examining bursts and turns into sand.
That was very unexpected.
And Captain Evolution is like, no one goes near this body or sees it until I say so, understand? That's not how he talks.
He just seems way too chill with all of this.
Yeah, that's why I remember watching the first episode, we both suspected he was evil, because he's just way too willing to accept everything that's going on.
But even like later in this episode, we can talk about this scene now because it has literally no bearing on the plot. Someone has left like a horse's crossing sign in his office, but they've cut off the head, so it's like a headless horseman.
If you recall, that was shot or cut off by the headless horseman in the first episode.
Oh, I didn't recall that.
Yeah, yes, it was.
But yes, they've left it in his office, and he's like, who did this? People are dead, including two of your own, and you think this is a joke? And Abby's ex-boyfriend is like, I did it. I did think it was a joke. And then Orlando Jones is like, good joke. What? What?
I'm sure he was going to fire him.
I know. I thought he was going to be like, get out.
Get
but
out,
no,
don't come back.
He was just like, yeah, you're right, this is funny. No, it's... What? Have some integrity.
Yeah, man. Have the courage of your convictions.
So that was also weird.
So, yeah. Crane and Abby start talking about how there's like a nightmare beast that's making people commit suicide, and Abby doesn't really want to admit that she's one of the two witnesses. Then there's this exchange where she says, I think we're out of luck unless you have an encyclopedia of faceless nightmare monsters. And I was sure he was going to say, I do.
Actually, yeah, I know.
But he didn't.
More's the pity.
Yeah. So they're looking over, the captain gave them all of Dr. Vega's tapes, including the tapes with
Jenny.
With Jenny, after they saw the spooky thing in the forest when they were kids. And they watch those, and like it's basically just recapping the plot. And then there's like a dumb bit where Crane accidentally leans on the remote control, and it rewinds with like a comical rewinding noise, and then it goes into slow-mo, because we can't have an episode go by without him doing some fish-out-of-water BS, which is actually one of the best parts of the show, so I don't know why I'm complaining about it.
I know. Honestly, there needs to be more of it, because I found this episode pretty dull.
I just want like episodes where he's like being totally perplexed by how to operate a microwave or whatever.
I still cannot get over when we recorded the first episode and I was on the AV Club and the latest Sleepy Hollow review they had done had a picture of him looking very confused wearing oven gloves.
And my boss is coming over for dinner.
Yeah, I want like Ichabod Crane makes a Thanksgiving dinner for the Force.
Give us more of that, please.
Yeah, like that. Just stop. I mean, don't stop with the monsters and stuff, but like tone it down a bit. Up the fish out of water. You got yourself a perfect TV show.
And bring back the Headless Horseman more so he can be like a sort of moustache-twirling villain.
Yes, that's also a good idea. When they finally let us create our own TV show, oh boy.
He rides away into the night every time they've almost got him. Then he, if you recall, he seems to live in a river and he just sort of goes back in there and they're like, done, he got away again.
But I also want him to have like his own version of laughing maniacally as he rides away.
Yeah.
We'll workshop it.
I mean, it could just be sort of an echoing laughter.
Maybe the horse laughs maniacally.
Maybe he does like a ventriloquist act with the horse.
What?
He does a ventriloquist act with the horse.
Yes. Yes.
So they debate some philosophy again, and they do some Star Wars bullshit about how fear causes inaction and inaction causes pain. QED, fear causes pain.
What's QED?
Quod erat demonstrandum. Thus it is proven, or something like that.
Right.
You know, yeah, fear is the path to the dark side. Fear leads to anger. Anger leads to hate. Hate leads to suffering. That sort of shit.
Right.
Because Abby thinks that Vega's guilt about lying about how crazy Jenny wasn't drove her to suicide. But then Crane is like, but what about your prophetic dream and that crazy shit with the eye?
Also a good point.
Yeah. So Crane is like, well, that's dumb. Let's go speak to your crazy sister.
But, oh, twist, crazy sister does not want to speak to them.
Well, she doesn't want to speak to Abby. She will speak to Crane. Yeah. Because he's so handsome.
I believe her actual excuse was curiosity. But definitely because he's so handsome.
Also, on the way there, we get some exposition about how she broke into a sporting goods store and stole survival gear for the apocalypse or something, and that's why she's been locked up.
Which is, okay. Yep, seems sure. Prudent to me.
That's what Crane said, too.
Well, me and Crane, tell you what.
Yeah, like you guys are mind. Really on point.
Absolutely.
Crane goes in and there's like this dumb exchange where she's like, are you Abby's new boyfriend? And he was like, well, yes, we are amicable and yes, I am male, but I believe you're trying to imply something more romantic.
Like, just say no, you dickhead. Yeah,
just like be straight with someone, you piece of trash. Anyway, then he says he's seen the demon in the woods and that gets her attention. And then she's like, shh, they lock you up here if you talk crazy. That's why I'm in here and that's why she's out there. She didn't tell you, huh? Ask her.
Such drama. Course he does. Because curiosity is what Ichabod is about.
Yeah.
So turns out Abby had just denied everything when Jenny was like, yeah, we saw a monster in the woods. And Abby's like, no, I didn't see shit.
And the reason she did that is because they were both children in the foster system and they had arrived in a good home. And she thought that if she told the truth and everyone thought they were crazy, they would get kicked out of the good house they were in and that would be bad for all of them. So she told Jenny they should both say they didn't see anything, but Jenny wouldn't do it.
Also because they were drinking beers in the woods after school. That's why they were in the first place. But alas.
Abby alludes to their parents being out of the picture and says that's a story for another time. So I'm sure that's going to be another source of, like, crippling backstory for her in a future episode.
Absolutely. Because, like, are they dead or are they just witches. Out of the picture? Do you say witches?
Yeah, they're witches.
I mean, they could be.
Yeah, right?
Literally anything's possible.
One of them's a headless horseman and the other is a hobgoblin.
Yes, of course. Oh boy, so what happened next?
We get a flashback where we see Mr. Gillespie, who found them when they were missing, and he also saw the creature, but he never admitted to it.
Why is everyone lying?
Because they're all afraid of being thought crazy or demons.
Both valid.
And they talk about how Mr. G wanted his 15 minutes of fame, but if people thought he was crazy, then he wouldn't get it.
But joke's on him, because now the sand demon's coming to visit him for being untruthful.
Yeah, we have some time with him where he's like working in his wood shop and then he has a nap and then he wakes up because there's a loud bang and there's a big old creepy silhouette moving around his workshop. It's late.
House?
Sure. Also, there was a bit here where he cut himself on, like, a loose nail. And then when he dabbed at it with his handkerchief, the blood that he dabbed away seemed to form some sort of weird symbol, but that never came up again.
Oh, I was going to ask you about it because I didn't know what it was.
Because it's not the same symbol that they had for the demon, the mystery ghost dream man later in the episode.
Yeah, I don't know what it was. And they didn't visit it again.
Let me just Google if Moloch has a symbol.
Every time I think you're saying mollusk and then I just picture him as being like a clam.
Okay, yes, that is according to this one picture. That is the symbol of the Shadow Warriors. And I assume that includes like the Headless Horseman because it is branded on the back of a head, which of a guy who I think is the guy who became the Headless Horseman. So that
in
symbol.
In real life.
Dun, dun.
Who became the Headless Horseman?
Are you asking me?
Like, what do you mean?
No, the guy in the past who Ichabod killed and then...
Oh, I didn't know if you meant in Sleepy Hollow. Yeah. So I was like, what? Okay, now it's good to know that there is not a real person who turned into the Headless Horseman.
So yes, that symbol does mean something. Good to know. Never came back up again this episode, though.
Excellent detective work, though.
Mystery solved. He gets spooked, the eyeless man shows up, he shoots him a few times and cut away.
To...
That scene that we're talking about with the prank happens and then that gets interrupted by the police being informed that there's being shots fired at the Gillespie Ranch. So everyone goes there.
Ah, yes.
But coincidentally, they all show up just as Abby and Crane show up because they were going to go speak to Mr. Gillespie because their investigation into Vega's suicide wasn't really going anywhere. They just decided to start looking into Abby's childhood.
Yeah, because they just she was like, oh, our investigation's dovetailed with yours. And I was like, has it?
There was like a vague through line, I guess.
Yeah. But also, of course, Orlando Jones does not really seem to give a shit.
No. He's like 5 years till retirement.
Also, has there been a scene where they've like given the okay for Ichabod to just insert himself into every investigation?
Not really.
Because I, like, when he was doing the interrogation in the dream sequence at the start of the episode, I wasn't even like, oh, this is obviously a dream sequence because he's doing the interrogation. I was like, oh, yeah, I get, yeah.
I mean, he seems to have as much authority as Abby just because Orlando Jones is so apathetic about, like, whether or not there's really an apocalypse coming.
Like, when he asked to see the body of, so he could look at the eyes and they were like, yeah. I was like, can you not question why this guy in old century garb is asking to look at the eyes of a suicide victim?
Well, the same thing happened last episode with the burnt up body in the car where they all just let him into the crime scene and wander over to the corpse and start touching it.
Yeah, like, maybe, I'm not a policeman, you do you, but it seems weird to me.
Yeah. So, once again, Mr. Gillespie wants to talk to Abby, so she puts on, like, a vest and goes on in there.
He basically just says, when you fall asleep, you'll die.
Also, he's there with his wife, and he has the big milky eyes, and his wife is terrified because he's been shooting guns.
Yeah.
There's a bit where Abby's like, I can help you, and then the Sandman passes behind her, and Mr. Gillespie starts shooting the gun into the ceiling, and everyone tries to run, and Abby's like, no, I'm fine. And then she waves at Ichabod out the window.
Because they're buddies, and you just gotta let your buddies know you're all good.
Yeah. I did like how when he heard the shots, as all of the police officers were starting getting ready to storm the building, like in the front, he just started like running perpendicular to them and circled around the back.
Yeah. You can go your own way. Go your own way.
Yep.
You can get into the house where people are shooting. You can go. Please interrupt me. Are you just seeing how long I could go?
Yeah, just seeing where you're going with this.
I don't know is the answer to that.
So then he's like, yeah, next time you fall asleep, he's going to get you, and then he shoots himself. So now it's nighttime.
So that's a bummer, yeah.
At this point, Abby is kind of creeped out.
Yeah, because she doesn't want to fall asleep and die, obviously.
Seems reasonable.
Absolutely.
They talk about Sandman myths and about, I liked the exchange where, Ichabod asks who's the Sandman, and Abby describes him as a kindly dream giver who sprinkles sand in the eyes of children to help them sleep, and Ichabod says, sounds barbaric.
Which, yeah.
So then they go back to the witness lair and start taking energy drinks.
Yes.
Crane does not care for the taste because he's old-timey.
Well, and also they taste disgusting.
True, yes, they are objectively gross. There's a reason it's called Monster, am I right?
Oh, hey yo. Anyway, so this is where the episode sort of veers off into, like,
Oh, because it's been so down to earth by this to this point.
Well, I mean, I don't know a lot about Native American stuff, but I just was a bit like, about the rest of this episode.
Okay, I didn't really raise my eyebrows, but anyway, that's fair enough. So, they get out their books. They find out that the creature is an 18th century Mohawk dream demon. I'm going to try to pronounce this, and I'm going to get it wrong. Rockenrontes.
You pronounce something.
It's R-O apostrophe K-E-N-H-R-O-N-T-E-Y-S.
Yeah, I don't know.
Ichabod talks about how, like, back in the war, many of our Mohawk friends were valuable spies, and we couldn't have done it without them, because despite being from the deepest past, Ichabod is just the most progressive dude you've ever met.
And thank goodness, because can you imagine if we had a TV show about someone who comes from the past but is just, like, the most racist?
I mean, we had a taste of that in the first episode where he met Abby and he was like, I assume you've been emancipated.
Yeah.
Yikes. There needs to be an election-themed episode where he's like, what? Women are allowed to vote? That's so progressive. Of course, I was in favour of it, he says, backpedaling.
Of course.
They go see a Mohawk shaman, and that Sandman song plays, like in that one Doctor Who episode with Sandman, and also that I reference in my introduction at the start of the episode.
Also, can I just clarify one very important point about this shaman?
You may.
Is it a shaman called Seamus?
I did not pick up on that.
I'm pretty sure his name is Seamus. Seamus the
Irish
shaman.
Irish name.
Seamus Shaman.
So they go see this, the only Mohawk guy they know, apparently, who works in a car yard, or owns a car yard.
And is, of course, wearing one of those
polo
tie things. Yes.
They go up, they go there. I like where this conversation where they introduce themselves as police officers or police officer and hanger on. And he says, the sheriff said I had 90 days to clean up the environmental waste out in the back. And Abby says, we're not here about that. And he goes, great.
Yeah.
So then they ask to help fight a spirit. And he's like, no. And they're like, come on, please. The only thing that's necessary for the triumph of evil is for good men to do nothing. And he's like, okay.
Yeah, there's nothing more that, like...
He's very easily convinced. Also, they prey on his fears of being haunted by dream demons.
Yes, because the dream demon obviously works on guilt. And how guilty is he going to feel if Abby dies and he didn't help her?
Yeah, take that. So now everyone has to help. So Seamus the Shaman talks about how he's a worse than usual demon because he doesn't just kill you. He taunts you with your own guilt and drives you to suicide. So the only way you can beat him is by fighting him in the dream world, like in Nightmare on Elm Street number 3 or 4, Dream Warriors.
But here's the thing. If you die in the dream, you die in real life.
Oh no, just like in real life.
Is that... There is a thing, right, where you if you... It's like a movie or something, and if you die in the game...
That's in a lot of things.
Yeah. I don't know what I'm thinking of.
If you die in the X, you die in real life is a pretty common joke expression these days.
But it's definitely in a thing. What is it? Anyway.
Nightmare on Elm Street.
It's in this, and that's what's
the
important.
The Matrix.
Inception!
Oh, yeah. If you die in the dream, you die in real life.
Inception is what I was thinking of. Okay, let's move on.
Okay, give me the kick. They drink some tea.
They have to... Or also, Ichabod decides he's coming with Abby into the dream world, so he has it as well, and then they have to have scorpions on their bellies for some reason.
He prefers the tea to energy drinks.
Because, of course. Mm-hmm. Of course he does.
Yeah, so they get strapped on these beds, and then scorpions sting them, because it's in their nature. And then they go into spooky dream woods. Would have been great, because they talk about how they're going to be going into the realm between life and death or something like that. Everyone passes through it, and some people go to hell and some people go to heaven, but the people who get stuck there are these creatures prey. And so it would have been great if, like, Ichabod bumped into Katrina while he was there, because that seems to fit with the description of where she is.
Yeah, that's a good point.
But no, I guess he was too busy finding nooses and things like that.
Yeah.
So
he finds all of the Sandman's victims. Oh, no, first Abby is...
Yeah, Abby's, like, in the woods, and then the Sandman throws sand in her eyes.
And, oh, shit, she got sand eyes.
Yep, she's got milk-white ghost eyes, but she's strapped to a table, so it's fine.
So...
Crane opens a freestanding red door and goes through a series of, like, abstract symbolism hallways.
And this is where he sees all of the victims.
Yeah, and he sees Vega and Mr. Gillespie and an empty noose for Abby.
Oh, shit, gotta save her.
Yeah. Abby is in the interrogation room again where she's watching her flashback interview as a kid where she kept saying she didn't see a demon and the man who was interviewing them keeps turning into the dream demon and being like, did you see something?
If you see something, say something.
Only you can prevent demon terrorism.
Call our demon hotline now.
1-800-666-666. some bullshit happens. He turns Crane's arm into sand.
Take me instead.
First, Crane shows up and he's like, your sins aren't mine to punish. And then immediately starts force choking him. So like, okay, I guess I'm just going to kill you anyway.
I mean, he's a demon. That seems to be his MO.
But he seems to have very specific target choices outside of this.
That's also a good point, yeah.
So then Abby starts sort of, like, doing her confession, and she's like, I saw a demon, I lied to protect myself, my bad, I won't do it again, you can attack me because I'm not afraid of you. And as she's talking, he's gradually turning into glass, and when his eyes glass over too, she hits him with a chair and shatters him, and that's the end of that.
They did it!
They once again really easily defeated one of these nightmare beasts.
Yeah.
Like, because in this episode and the previous one, less so with the Headless Horseman in the first, because I guess he's a recurring antagonist, they spend the whole episode building these creatures up, and then the actual confrontation is just so sort of low energy.
Yeah, I agree. Supernatural, at least, had a big demon showdown.
At least in Supernatural, that woman trapped them behind a cabinet.
Okay, yeah, you're right. Okay, so they wake up and they're like, cool.
Yeah. Mystery solved. No more scorpions. Ever. We enter the debrief.
Captain Apathy comes in.
As they go back to the witness cave and Captain Apathy comes in.
And he's like, Or Ichabod's like, oh, don't you want to know what we discovered in the course of our investigation? And Captain Apathy is like, man, just tell me it's done. And he's like, yes. And Captain Apathy is like, great, I'll get you a key to the records room. Don't break any more walls. Bye.
He comes in and they're like, how did you get in here? And Ichabod's like, oh, I broke a wall. Grabs that collar.
I'm glad that they addressed that because last week I was like, mm-mm-mm.
That's going to
consequences for your actions.
But how did he not notice?
That is also a good point, yes.
So Abby says that she thought that the archive room would be a good spot for them to do their work on the premises and out of the way. And the captain says, good idea. So he's just so ambivalent about this.
I think he clearly is just like, okay, you handle the supernatural shit, but don't tell anyone. And also you're just going to be down here alone and just let's never speak of this.
Making out.
Make it go away.
I think...
Oh, we went different directions with make.
Maybe on a personal level he is willing to believe it, but he just, you know, is more concerned with being accountable to his superiors and things like that.
I mean, if that's what they're going for, they're not doing it very well.
He just has, like, more professional priorities, I guess.
Yeah, I guess.
So he leaves and we have a brief sort of emotional debrief where Abby goes to thank him at Crane, and he's like, you're welcome, before he can say it. And he's like, also, you should go see your sister. And she's like, I'm already doing that.
God, you're not my real dad, Ichabod.
He could be.
He could be.
Unlikely.
Very unlikely. So, yeah, she goes to see Jenny, and the nurse is like, look, she don't want to see you. If she don't want to talk to you, she doesn't have to. And Abby's like, that's okay. She just has to listen.
Yeah. But then they go into her hospital cell.
And she's not there.
What?
How did she get out?
The nurse is like, the doors are electronically locked. There's no way out. And Abby says, she found one. Get the administrator and lock the building down. I want to see my sister behind bars at once.
Yeah, it seemed a bit overly aggressive.
Especially since you know she's not crazy.
Yeah, exactly.
And so they run off, and then Abby investigates the cell and opens up a big hatch in the ceiling and is like, she's good.
Like, no, she's not. That's a pretty obvious escape route, guys.
Yeah, you should probably patch that up, guys.
Like, who has not seen at
the
least
Shawshank
12
Redemption.
Movies where someone gets out through an air vent?
She should have at least covered it with a pin-up.
Exactly.
So, that brings us to the end of the episode.
Yeah, it was a very dramatic, oh, she's good. Bomb!
What will happen next time on Sleepy Hollow?
Well, that brings us to the question, are we going to find out?
Ichabod will probably punch a werewolf or something.
It's like all of Liam Neeson fights a wolf, but it's just Ichabod Crane.
He really reminds me of a friend of mine, actually.
Oh, really?
Yeah, someone with similar hair and beard.
Interesting. Is that a good comparison?
Sure. He's not unhandsome.
Good
So I guess we should discuss, is this a hot case or a cold case?
Personally, I think this is chilling up to be as cold as the woods in between worlds.
That's a good metaphor, Regan.
But what do you think?
Yeah, I'm kind of done with it, honestly.
Great.
Like, I'm willing to come back to it eventually one day, but I don't know. Give me some mortal antagonists and some mysteries to solve.
Yeah, all right, let's get some mortal antagonists next week then.
That's a good name for a young adult book series, Mortal Antagonists.
Yeah.
They're
maybe that could be the name of our TV show that
they
we're
going to... antagonists to a variety of... seemingly benevolent spooks and spectres, but they have a dark agenda, and can they overcome it? Yes, with the help of one scrappy white girl.
Of course.
Named Harriet Pottertrix.
Harriet Pottertrix.
Pottertrix. P-O-T-T-E-R space T-R-I-C-K-S.
Amazing.
Harriet Pottertrix are for kids.
Harriet Pottertrix are only for ages 8 and up.
Do not... consume Harriet Pottertrix while pregnant or on a roller coaster.
Do not try and drive heavy vehicles after consuming Harriet Pottertrix.
This bit's kind of getting away from us.
Yeah, it is, yeah. do we have a mystery of the week?
I don't.
I don't either.
Byron Wheeler.
Well, guess that's it from us then.
Yeah, I'll try to put one together for next week.
Wonderful. Or one of you could pull one together, listeners. God, we're doing all the heavy lifting here.
But they won't, of course, have heard this until after we record the next episode.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. That's a very good point that you've made there. okay, well, let's...
go... mystery.
Rangers. Yeah.
Cacao.
All right, well, you can Find us on Twitter at MysteryTwinsDA. You can email us at mtdetectiveagency@gmail.com.
Or l.s.smith@live.com.au.
All right. Stealing all of our email correspondence away from me. I see how it is.
Yeah, I'm coveting them.
Our theme music is In the Crowd by The Years. And
engage with our show, please.
Please do. Yeah, no, that's it. I don't have anything else interesting to say.
I didn't have anything interesting to say from the start.
That's a very good point. Hopefully,
you take
this time
that back.
Week, I'll be recording in my big winner's crown.
Is that like one of those king hats?
I wish, no. Like, it's such a fancy diamante crown, but I bought myself one just in case I don't win, so I've got one anyway. So,
oh, very
either
nice.
Way, going to be recording in a crown next week. That's my pledge to you, Mystery Junior. What are we calling our
junior
fan
detective.
Base? Junior detectives.
Yeah.
That's my promise to you, junior detectives. I'll be wearing a crown and I'll fucking tweet a picture of it.
Until next time, remember, mystery is always out there.
And no yachts.
And we're not really twins. Don't you forget
Bye.
It. Or else.